On Tech News Today, Elise Hu is our co-anchor today, and Mashable's Lance Ulanoff joins us to talk about new humanoid robots for consumers. Plus, the U.S. may soon have only three major wireless carriers instead of four, and Amazon is going to launch a major hardware product in a couple of weeks, but what is it? All that and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 5th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Elise Hu, a reporter who covers technology for NPR's radio and online news outlets. Welcome, Elise.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Now, sexism in the tech industry is rampant, and you have been covering it really thoroughly recently. And I was especially interested in a report that you did on a recent Tech Week event invitation. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah, these incidents have been cropping up a lot in the last couple of weeks. And obviously, already tech is an industry that has been struggling with inclusiveness and has a dearth of women. There's a huge gender gap. And so Tech Week Chicago is going on soon. And Tech Week Chicago has been around for 4 years now and is having its first annual Black Tie Rave coming up. And in advance of this rave, it sent out party invites with these scantily clad, provocatively posing women out to everybody who was who they wanted to invite. Now, this included their Tech 100 list of tech industry influencers like Harper Reed, the former CTO of Obama for America, and other major VCs in Chicago. And they immediately said, pull me off your list. We don't want to be involved if you're going to objectify women in this way. And then Crain's Chicago Business, which is a publication and a media sponsor, they have decided to drop their sponsorship as well in order to sort of stand up for women and stand up for inclusiveness in the industry.
Well, it's great to see a coverage like yours bringing attention to this. Also, it's great to see companies pulling out and doing their part. And I also think that the TV show Silicon Valley is bringing a lot of awareness to sexism in a hilarious way, in a memorable way. So anyway, kudos to you for those articles.
Yeah, the whole notion of it, right, is becoming a little bit more mainstream thanks to HBO, how sort of male-led it is.
Yep, I love that show. Well, the Japanese company SoftBank said today they plan to sell humanoid robots to consumers starting in February. Their $1,900 robot product called Pepper will be able to work as a babysitter, nurse, and emergency medical worker, and will also be able to respond to human emotions, according to SoftBank CEO Masayoshi Son. Lance Ulanoff is editor-at-large at Mashable, and he's here to tell us about Pepper. Welcome, Lance.
Thanks for having me. So Pepper's I love the idea that more companies are getting into robotics, and apparently SoftBank had made their intentions clear probably three or four years ago that they wanted to get into this. They partnered with a company called, I believe it's Aldebaran. I can never quite say the name. They didn't build this on their own. It was a company that has been building smaller humanoid. Yes, there it is. Aldebaran. Companies that's been building smaller humanoid robots for a while, actually. They were educational, mostly demonstration. But this is very clearly intended to be a consumer-level robot. And the problem with a lot of humanoid robots we've seen thus far, including Honda Asimo, is that they never make it to market. I just saw earlier this year an incredible demonstration by the bipedal Asimo was walking around, and yet they still couldn't tell me when, if ever, it would come into users' homes, and it would probably cost a whole lot more money than this. If this really ends up being $2,000, that would be incredible. By the way, I'm kind of skeptical of that, knowing what I know about what it takes to build robotics at this level and the ability that this has to move in the way it does and how it can recognize. It has a lot of sensors in the hand, in the head. It has facial recognition, voice recognition. It's cloud connected. It's got, obviously artificial intelligence that's both in the cloud and local. It does a whole lot of stuff. That is typically a lot more than $2,000. And by the way, what you can't quite see there is it's about 4 feet tall, weighs about 60 pounds. I hope that they can really do it. I mean, even look at the hands. The hands are so articulate. It's extremely exciting to see something like this. But I think everybody should take it with a grain of salt. Masayoshi-san is a really interesting guy. He tends to be somewhat bombastic, kind of funny, speaks off the cuff. I know he was very excited to roll this out there, but, let's talk in 2015 and see if these things at least appear for consumers in Japan, which, by the way, Japan is always leading in robotics. Why? That population is aging faster than ours, and they need home health care workers more than we do, although we will catch up.
It looks like right now the robot is demonstrating how it can rip the heart out of somebody's body and crush it with its robot hand. Now, you mentioned that Japan is ahead in humanoid robots. And that's
lying.
What makes it it shows off to a bad start. Yeah. That's what makes it so astonishing that the company is going with a French. The company is a French company, so it's a Japanese company that's going to be selling a French humanoid robot. Now, Lance, you're a parent. Elise, who you're a parent. I'm a parent. Would any of us trust this thing to babysit children?
No, not yet. Now, right now, I have teenagers now, so I'd be glad to leave it at home, so
right.
We can just sort of say no parties, no drinking. But yeah, to actually take care of a small child that I care about, not yet. By the way, we don't even know how much weight it can hold, because you have to be able to lift something if you have to a 20-pound baby.
Yeah.
Between this robot taking care of your kid and then the Google driverless cars that can take them, to and from school and stuff. Man, what are parents going to do in the future?
They're just going to
live off the fat of the land, I guess.
We're going to build robots.
Actually, that sounds pretty good.
What if I reverse it and have my robot or have my kids take care of the robot because the robot becomes more precious?
Yeah, exactly.
No kidding.
Yeah,
that's right.
It is kind of adorable. What you didn't hear there is the sounds that it makes. It doesn't say words, but it makes these childlike sounds. When it's holding that heart, by the way, it's like making all these weird noises. Although I do think it would have been hysterical if it had actually ripped someone's heart out and that's what it was holding.
Now, speaking of the heart, Sun says actually that it's going to be affectionate. It'll respond to human emotion and it has something called an emotional engine. What is that about exactly? I mean, it'll actually read the emotions on people, and if you're sad, it'll give you a hug or something.
Well, it uses facial recognition to tell the difference between a smile and a frown, vocal intonation to tell if you're happy or sad depending on how your voice sounds. It'll have some of this local, but it will use what it learns and use the cloud to get smarter. And one of the examples that they talk about is reading your child a book and then after the fact telling you, your child smiled while I was reading the book to him. And so, so it enjoyed this as opposed to screaming in terror because a robot is reading you a book. So, I think that, it's... The thing about robots, especially humanoid robots, is the uncanny valley where something looks too close to human but not quite. Like humans are very perceptive about something being off, and that's why they're freaked out by robots. So the movements of this robot in particular, you see it's very fluid, and that's where people start to go, that's a little weird. But if it can respond to you in a way that is more human, like at an emotional level, you may feel more comfortable. By the way, Honda Asimo had done something similar, although it's less autonomous. They pre-programmed in, for example, if it was serving a table full of people, instead of just jumping up and plopping cups down, it would actually stop, greet everyone individually, and then put the cups down. So, this idea of trying to make robots not just look more human, but act in that humans can digest is a larger trend.
Hmm. Well, it looks pretty.
But Lance, is there a? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Elise.
Mike. Just one more question, real quick, Lance. Is there a societal implication or question about kind of trusting robots to take care of our elderly? I feel like there's something sad about that in a way, right?
Yeah, well, it is a very difficult question. You know, leaving aside robots, you know, that, you know, people deal with this every day, that at some point their elderly parents can no longer take care of themselves. In the best situation, you're able maybe to move them in with you and take care of them, or you're close to them. But the reality is that we are all spread out. In fact, we're more spread out now than we ever were before. So children, you know, and grandchildren, they're not close to the elderly. It is expensive to put them in homes, you know, to put them in assisted living. So robots may give people the option of keeping these people in their familiar home, but having the benefits of so-called assisted living with a robot there. And of course, most of these robots, so you notice there's a 10.1-inch screen on Pepper's chest. So theoretically, if you had that robot as a home health caregiver, you could on occasion appear on its chest and talk to your parent, your elderly parent or grandparent, ask how they're doing. So I think that it's actually a good trend. It's a way of a technological solution to a very large societal problem.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I'm a big fan of Japanese culture, and this is a recurring theme, actually, the care and neglect of the elderly within Japanese culture. There's a really famous movie from the 50s called Tokyo Story by Yasujiro Ozu, and it's a real tearjerker about grandparents who go to visit their kids and grandkids into Tokyo, and just kids have no time for them at all. So anyway, it's a recurring theme, and apparently you know, care robots are actually pretty popular in Japan, surprisingly. Okay. Well, in just a sec, we're going to talk about how we may be moving from 4 carriers to 3. Oh, well, but first, I want to say goodbye to Lance Gulenoff. I'm sorry. Lance, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today.
Thanks for having me. I am not a robot, so I do appreciate the emotional response.
I appreciate you not replacing yourself with a robot for these segments, because your insights are always welcome. So thanks again, Lance.
Thanks for having me.
You can find Lance at Mashable.com, of course, and on Twitter at Lance Ulanoff. That ends with two Fs. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about Sprint and T-Mobile and what they're doing together. You might be surprised, but I'm first going to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is a fantastic website for building a website. If you want to have a website, a blog, you want to put on an online store, a wedding registry, whatever it is you want to do, Squarespace is by far the best place to do it, because they start with brilliant design. Now, there are website templates and services all over the place, but none of them have design like this. You're going to be amazed by how nice these designs are. You start with a template, and then you can customize it with additional pages, additional features and functions, and also with a different look and feel. You can change the typography, the colors. Absolutely everything is changeable. If you know how to code, you can do that as well. If you don't know how to code websites, then you can just simply go in there and use the very easy-to-use controls. There's even live chat and email support 24/7. You'll get your question answered, not by a robot, but by a real human being who knows what they're talking about. And e-commerce is supported on all subscription plan levels. It starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And, of course, Squarespace is mobile-ready. Your website will look fantastic on a phone, tablet, or a full-size desktop. And you can also manage your site using Squarespace's cool apps for managing the site. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT to get 10% off. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, Sprint has agreed to buy T-Mobile for $32 billion, according to Reuters. The deal has not been announced by the companies, and the information comes from unnamed sources. Elise Hu, this is kind of a depressing story in at least one dimension, which is that, you know, we only have 4 mobile major carriers, mm-hmm. and it looks like if this thing goes through and is approved by regulators, we could have 3.
I've actually been pretty impressed and fascinated by T-Mobile's movement in the market just over the last year, how competitive they've gotten and how creative they've gotten in trying to market themselves and compete with the big Verizon and the big AT&T. And so, but you know, obviously the bottom line rules, and Sprint has been losing money for what, 7 years now, and is deeply in debt. And so these smaller carriers are obviously arguing that they have to get together or else they won't survive. And T-Mobile and AT&T, that merger obviously got stopped by the government. And so this may be the time for them to move.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our last story, we talked about the CEO of SoftBank, Masayoshi Son. And of course, SoftBank owns Sprint. And T-Mobile is, two-thirds of T-Mobile is owned by Deutsche Telekom. So this is a basically, this is basically a Japanese company buying what is essentially a German company. And it's, of course, a U.S., a couple of U.S. carriers. Now, if the deal doesn't go through, apparently Sprint would have to pay T-Mobile more than $1 billion in cash. And of course, as you mentioned, the deal by AT&T didn't go through, and AT&T had to pay dearly. The deal would roughly be 50% cash and 50% stock. And again, this news, they may have announced it by now, but as of about an hour ago, this was just coming from unnamed sources. So
right, and our newsroom is still trying to verify it as well, Mike. So just to let you know, I haven't been able to independently confirm it, but this is coming out of Reuters and their sources at the moment.
Yeah. So we'll keep posted on that. If you watch Tech News Tonight, we'll probably have more details, and also go to npr.com, right?
.org.
NPR. I knew
we're
something
nonprofit.
Wrong with it. Yeah. npr.org for further developments in this story. Now, Amazon posted a promotional video for a new product announcement that's going to take place on June 18th. It's probably the rumored smartphone that we've reported here on Tech News Today. A few frames of the video reveal the top of a smartphone. Some sharp-eyed Google Plus user discovered that earlier today. And a Bloomberg source says that Amazon plans to announce a smartphone this month. So this is really sounding like that's what they're going to announce. Now, if you recall from our previous coverage, the Amazon phone is rumored to have a 4.7-inch display and a 720p display. That's pretty low res, but it has 3D a 3D display that has an hologram-like effect. That's probably what the goofy people in this video are responding to, is this 3D hologram display that's affected by four cameras built all around the outside of the device. It apparently works sort of like Xbox Kinect to understand where your eyeballs are, so that it knows exactly how to show 3D without you having to wear goofy glasses. This sounds surprising to me, Elisu, because, you know, these kind of gimmicks are very risky in the smartphone market. What people tend to want in a smartphone is high-quality screens, you know, a lot of performance and power, great cameras, and so on. 3D hologram-like effects, this is a new territory.
This actually kind of is akin to, in my mind, to the curved 4D televisions that haven't quite taken off, even though they were much hyped at places like CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. But for our viewers out there, y'all really should see this Amazon promo video, because the way they set it up, where they don't show the actual device, but you're watching people react to it, the buildup and the theater around it is just sort of fascinating for me as a cultural observer. And so check out that video, and you can see the girl here we're showing, where she's sort of rocking back and forth. So that does indicate the sort of 3D-like product that we suspect, and many news organizations are reporting it is. Now, one thing they could do besides the gimmick of the actual product is gimmicky pricing. So I'm really interested to see, Mike, how Amazon might subsidize the cost of the phone, making it free, for instance, to try and get people to purchase it. Have you seen anything on that front about pricing?
I haven't, but it's reasonable speculation, because they, of course, did that with their Kindle tablets. And, you know, Amazon is their bread and butter is downloadable content and goods and services that you can buy from their enormous catalog of products. And so to subsidize a device like this, if such a device facilitates purchasing, is a good business decision for them. And of course, the kind of purchasing that a smartphone would be likely to give them is something called showrooming, where you're at Best Buy and you're shopping, and you see something you like, and so you whip out your phone and you buy it on Amazon.com and walk out of the store. And it's kind of a rotten deal for Best Buy and the other brick-and-mortar retailers, but it's what people do, and I think Amazon, of course, clearly has an interest in facilitating that that behavior.
Yeah, and there were rumors, I think, a couple of months ago from multiple sources to, I believe, Boy Genius Report about Prime Data and whatever that is, so that kind of plays into, you know, some sort of pricing, possibly decrease or whatever, for Prime users potentially. So,
yeah,
interesting.
And of course, like the Kindle tablets that run Android, this is almost certainly going to be a forked version of Android that's not going to take you to the Google Play Store. It'll take you to Amazon alternatives to things you can get on the Google Play Store. So, you know, they are an aggressive company. There is no question about that. Well, Twitter is actively pursuing major acquisitions, according to several reports. The company's been in talks to acquire the Berlin-based audio sharing website SoundCloud, according to the Financial Times. Twitter's also been considered buying Spotify and Pandora. And the Wall Street Journal reported last month that talks between Twitter and SoundCloud had ended because Twitter decided the acquisition was too expensive. But now it looks like they're back and talking very seriously about an acquisition. In related news, Twitter did acquire a company called Namo Media, a company that specializes in native advertising, which are ads that come in the form of sponsored articles. Elise Hu, this is really interesting to see how aggressive Twitter's getting with acquisitions. And it's a pandemic in Silicon Valley. These acquisitions, there's so much acquisition news these days.
Right. And that's fueling the conversations, I'm sure, on your coast, Mike, about the possibilities that we're in a tech bubble again. Obviously, we've talked and sort of debunked that notion on past shows. But Twitter has to play a long game here, right? It can't maintain itself and continue making a profit and drawing big margins by or margins at all, right, by just being a 140-character service. And so it looks like they're trying to become get into the music streaming game. It'll be interesting how all of that gets integrated. And SoundCloud, from some sources that I've talked to, hasn't been the most sort of well-organized and well-run organization because it's been so successful so quickly. And so this might be a good opportunity for Twitter to get in at a lower price and really help the organization of SoundCloud get a little bit more together and grown up, if you will.
Yeah, and there's some speculation that the Apple's acquisition of Beats Electronics spurred this because, of course, Beats has Beats Music, which is is an online semi-social music service that, among its several attributes, tries to facilitate the cultivation of bands and music and fandom. They haven't done a good job of that so far, in my opinion. I've used the app and the service, and it's not there yet. But they've stated the intention to do a much better job at that. And SoundCloud, of course, enables the recording, uploading, and promoting of music. So both of these services are kind of alternative. SoundCloud is probably best for indie bands and smaller bands. Beats Music is probably best for big-name bands and artists. But either way, it looks like everybody's getting very serious about trying to reinvent the music business to a certain extent and figure out how to get more exposure for bands. And you know, I think it probably, as you said, it'd probably be a great move for SoundCloud and get them a lot more exposure and notoriety and usage.
But man, this is MySpace's last stand, right? I mean, MySpace went into the music promotion and opportunity for bands to promote their songs and sample space, and it's getting killed in this too. So
maybe they were a little ahead of their time.
Right.
Hard to actually form those words, but yeah, I think MySpace might have been a little ahead of time. Well, Google Glass just got more hands-free. A new experimental feature enables users to simply look at the tiny display in order to see incoming messages. The feature is called Notification Glance, and it works only after a message arrives on Glass and only after the notification sound, and then there's a little window whereby looking at the screen, it'll just pop up and show you the message. You previously had to tap on the side of the headset or tilt your head back. Very difficult to do in order to read incoming messages. And I think this makes a lot of sense, Elise Hu, because, you know, what is the point of Google Glass unless you can use it hands-free? I mean, the great thing about it is you can be using both your hands for some other task and still use a computer.
Right. And then this news, of course, this functionality news is coming on top of the news that Google has involved fashion designer Diane von Furstenberg in helping design Google Glasses to be a totally different look and a little bit more chic. And so it looks like Glass is making some moves to not only improve its functionality so that you look less weird on the street while you're using this wearable, and just to make their product itself a little bit more attractive so that it's more socially acceptable. So there's some things happening on the form and the function front.
Yeah, and nothing says less weird than von Furstenberg. Sarcasm and sarcasm. Well, we told you last week about Amazon's battle with publishing giant Hachette. The two companies have been unable to agree on pricing for ebooks. The online retailer has been delaying book deliveries from the publisher by weeks and preventing buyers from pre-ordering their books. Well, last night, comedy talk show host Stephen Colbert lashed out at his Amazon, flipping them off twice on camera and calling for a boycott of the company. Colbert's own books are published by Hachette, and he also announced the sale of a book of book stickers that say, "I didn't buy it on Amazon." Colbert even promoted a Hachette book called California by Eden Lepucky for sale via a link on his website because he says he wants to prove he can sell more books than Amazon. And he probably can, at least, Sue. This is a, you know, what was interesting about this video, the Stephen Colbert video, is that he was slamming Amazon and getting huge applause from the audience. It sounded like his audience was, you know, rabidly anti-Amazon.
Well, his audience is going to go with him. You know, obviously, that's the studio audience that's stoked up to sort of support him. But it is an interesting situation, right? Because it's pitting publisher against a disruptor like Amazon. Amazon has already disrupted the brick and mortar store in a lot of ways. And now it really just doesn't want to play nice with publishers. And so it calls into question what becomes more important for us as consumers, the platform in which we buy things or the actual content of the stuff that we're buying. And that's vexing for us. That puts us in a difficult spot. But and I haven't seen what Amazon's had to say about all of this. Are they staying quiet as usual, or are they defending their position?
Are they, to the best of my knowledge, they haven't responded to Colbert. Maybe they have, and I haven't seen it, but they did respond to some reports in the media essentially slamming them. Their response was essentially that, you know, yeah, we always negotiate with book publishers, and, you know, we don't know, the negotiations aren't going well, we don't know if we're really going to be selling these books, so why take pre-orders? You know, they came out with what is essentially a fairly, you know, it sounded reasonable what they were saying. And of course, the Hachette also countered that and said, no, this is terrible, they're throwing their weight around. And I've also seen reports that we're in for a lot more of these types of negotiations and probably some more harsh tactics by Amazon because we're entering in a season of contract renegotiations for publishers. So there's going to be a lot of this going on, apparently. And, man, this is turning into a little bit of a PR nightmare for Amazon. You know, Stephen Colbert has a huge audience.
So. Yes, indeed. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out if other publishers also get bullied in the same way, if you will.
Yeah. And speaking of companies being bullied, yesterday we talked about attacks on U.S. tech companies by state-owned newspapers in China, and now China's state-owned TV broadcasters attacking Microsoft Windows 8. The segment claims that the operating system makes users' personal information available to Microsoft, which collectively can give information about the Chinese economy and society. So it was pitched as a kind of threat to national security because all this information about China as a country could be divined from this and presumably gathered by the NSA or whatever. According to an expert, yeah. And this was according to an expert picked by the TV program, he was some kind of academic, an expert on Windows 8, I don't know. The Chinese government recently banned Windows 8 for use by government workers, saying that the termination of support for Windows XP somehow indicates that Windows 8 itself is insecure. I guess they're worried that in, you know, years and years into the future, Microsoft may not support it. So, you know, this goes back to a threat that the Chinese government made about, you know, how all of these American products would have to be reevaluated for as security threats because of the Edward Snowden revelations and NSA mass surveillance. So it's really kind of an odd thing. And coincidentally, and presumably to the extent that products like Windows 8 can be de-emphasized in China, Chinese alternatives can be can have a chance at becoming mainstream.
Yeah, and so this is really interesting that you brought this up, Mike, because I'm actually in the midst of working on a story about this notion of a cool war between the U.S. and China. Not a cold war in which we have very clear enemies and no cooperation whatsoever, but a cool war, this notion where China remains our largest trading power or partner. We have economic interests that are tied, and yet we're highly distrustful of each other, especially on the economic front in which we're now battling. And so, yes, not only have state-owned or has the government basically said you cannot use Microsoft products and the Microsoft operating system on our computers, they've also now demanded that companies like Cisco and their network equipment all be vetted and go through their new cybersecurity vetting for fears of cyber espionage by the U.S. Meanwhile, you might remember at the end of May, I think it was May 19th, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder came out and charged for the first time ever foreign government officials, Chinese government officials, for spying on our companies, Alcoa, Westinghouse, U.S. Steel. And so this cool war, which is what scholars call it, is escalating now in a lot of ways that are really hitting the bottom line of our businesses, our tech companies in particular, like Cisco, like Microsoft. And so it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. But basically, we say they're spying on us all the time. They're saying that all our equipment, so our companies are becoming the middlemen in this, all our equipment is spying on them all the time. And I think maybe both sides are kind of right.
Yeah, that's true. And there is also, I think, you know, I tend to think that the Cool War sort of reference to this sort of global semi-conflict is a good one, because essentially the original Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union was all about, you know, the hearts and minds and control of the rest of the world. It was about the global stage and who had more influence in different regions of the world. That's the definition of a superpower, when every square inch of the globe is considered part of your national interest. And so in the case of the United States and China, both of these very large and powerful countries are active internationally. China's increasingly active globally, but with different points of view. The United States tends to have a moralistic and an anti-terror approach to its involvement in other countries. By moralistic, I mean always punishing companies with sanctions because they're doing various things. And that, of course, that's contingent upon how much of an ally or how much we need them. There are countries like Saudi Arabia that have horrible internal records, and we pretty much treat them very nicely. And sell
because of our needs, right?
Exactly, because we need that oil. But China tends to have a very agnostic approach to foreign policy that's directly in their national interest. They seem to be willing to pick up the and start up relationships with the countries that have been shunned by the United States for ethical or political reasons, simply because they want to have influence and so on. And also there's the problem of U.S. dominance of waters around Asia, which China is increasingly exerting influence in that region. And so it's in terms of the core source of this, it's just like the original Cold War. But as you pointed out, the U.S. and the Soviet economies were never intertwined like this. They're our most important economic country, and we are their most important economic country. So I doubt this is really going to go too far for that reason. But, it's clearly that the Chinese government is on the warpath here against, not against the United States government militarily, but against the U.S. companies economically.
Right. So they become the middlemen and the targets.
That's right. Well, that's the tech news today. Elise Hu, I want to thank you for coming on as guest co-anchor. And I'd also like to welcome you as our ongoing Thursday co-anchor. So glad to have you on board. And, and our audience loves having you on as co-anchor. You're really great with your analysis. And thanks again for joining us.
I'm happy to be here today, and I'm happy to be here in the future, Mike. It's always a really great time. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you again. You can subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT, and you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And we want to hear from you. So comment on Twitter or Google+ using the hashtag Tech News Today. You can also send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. See you tomorrow.